next case is 96-2490, Board of Trustees of Miami Township versus the Fraternal Order of Police. Mr. Cox.
Yes, please. I'm Paul Cox, Chief Counsel for the Fraternal Order of Police, Patrick Johnson. And I will attempt to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. This case before you today is not a rerun of the Officer Department versus OCCA. Worked made no effort, in our opinion, to find either of the factors which we set out in that case. The order that the express currently agreed, or the order without rational support cannot be rationally derived from the commission. The Court of Appeals said, goes off on an issue which we think is somewhat confused. Patrick Floyd of Miami Township's department admitted that 3 or 4 years earlier he had stolen $200 from 2 citizens upon which he had occasion to be involved in the course of his duties. No law of the state of Ohio requires that the punishment for an offense such as this be termination of employment. Yet what people can see for the purpose of this argument, at least, that the employer was justified in taking some action in this case. Does the appellant believe that the termination was too severe, especially in light of the kind of prosecutor's decision not to prosecute, that would be demanded arbitration in accordance with the terms of the collective bargaining?
Where in the arbitration statute is there anything that it says that you can disagree with what the arbitrator did with regard to penalty and therefore appeal? I mean, it says you've got to have fraud of the arbitrator, you have to have a vested interest, you have to do all those sorts of things, then maybe you can vacate or you can modify. Those are the two statutes, but there has to be some real error. What is the error here of the arbitrator deciding that in fact the penalty was too severe?
Justice Douglas, we would agree with the statement here about the statute in respect to your question, and observe that I don't believe either the appellees or the Court of Appeals actually addressed that issue, actually addressed the statutory constitutional reversal. The case arose from the arbitrator's decision awarding a restatement to Patrolman McCoy and substituting a 30-day suspension for the termination originally administered by the appellee. The award was appealed to the appellate court, which confirmed the award. Well, that appeal to the Second District Court of Appeals, which vacated the jury remanded the case under 127.10 for a re-arbitration, reaching its conclusion on pages 7 and 8 of its decision. The Court of Appeals found the arbitrator's decision was made, quote, in manifest disregard of the agreement of Kansas DACA in state law or in case laws developed in the state on arbitration. In fact, the court relied upon the case Maryland Pierce Madison and Smith Incorporated versus Dallas, 75th, 3rd, 14. In its analysis of the Court of Appeals reaching its conclusion, it is the analysis of the Court of Appeals reaching its conclusion to which the FOP takes issue. ORC 2711-10 provides for circumstances under which a court may vacate an arbitration award finding. It can find corruption, fraud, or undue means for use of the court. It can find partiality or corruption on the part of the arbitrator. It can find misconduct of the arbitrator, misbehavior, which prejudices the right of the party to present it. And it can find that the arbitrator exceeded his powers and so improperly, perfectly performed them, that he failed to make a final or technical report.
And that's about the only place there could be an appeal. And from my standpoint, that he exceeded his authority, he really misinterpreted the contract. Why didn't he? Why isn't that what happened? You have somebody who stole money, wants to be a police officer in another jurisdiction. They say no, they fire him, and suddenly an arbitrator comes in and says, well, he's found Christ, so everything's okay now.
So was our opinion, the arbitrator looking at the contract which provides that disciplines must be administered only for just cause, apply the standard to the determination of whether punishment was deserved, what the severity of that punishment would be.
But see, that's the just cause was the subject that he was asked to determine. Under the contract, was it just cause? And the several times in his decision, he concedes there was just cause, doesn't he? The arbitrator goes beyond that and says, but you know what? I'm going to look at the scope of the discipline here. And that's why I guess there's a good argument to be made that he exceeded his authority.
Justice, we believe that just cause is not just a look at the question of whether or not the events which are charged occur. Just cause is a look at the arbitration, is at the punishment. Not just whether or not the employee committed the offense charged,
mm-hmm.
whether or not the discipline administered is appropriate to the offense.
Isn't it just cause for discharge? Isn't that the normal language we use in employment law? We say whether or not there was just cause for discharge. Just cause doesn't sit out there by itself. It's just cause for what?
Absolutely.
And so this is just cause for discharge. So isn't that implicit in just cause is there was punishment? Now, where was he asked to decide having found just cause, what punishment should be imposed?
Justice Cook, the answer to your question is contained in your question. When you say just cause for discharge,
mm-hmm.
the question is not just whether the employee did what he was charged with doing, but whether or not the employer acted properly in administering the punishment.
In the contract, the arbitrator was to look to the collective bargaining agreement here. What language? Can you find a language where just cause is? Do you have it there?
No, the language says just cause.
Just cause. In what context? Okay. In what? What's the whole sentence?
And it says discipline. I think it says discipline shall not be administered except for just cause.
I can help you. The employer may not suspend, discharge, or otherwise discipline employees except for just cause.
Okay.
And remember, in Ohio, in accordance with your case law, arbitrators are interpreting the language. He was hired by the parties to interpret the meaning of the word just cause. And just because the employer, for the court of common pleas, for the court of appeals, may have disagreed with that interpretation.
Well, they can't do that. I agree.
Still should be.
Sure. They can't. They can't do that.
So, assuming for a moment that you and I have a disagreement about the term just cause, what it means in the context of this case, I would suggest to you that the arbitrator solved that issue back at the arbitration. And if he determined they did not have just cause to fire the people, they had just cause to give him. They had just cause to give him 30-day suspension.
The Court of Appeals, as you know, also said that the arbitrator's award does not derive its essence from the collective bargaining agreements, which is a test that we've stated in case law. Isn't that really the essence of what the Court of Appeals is saying, is that the arbitrator here was much more concerned about the fact that the officer was contrite, that he'd found Christ, and that he had reformed himself, without referring to at all to the essence of the contract, which has these statements, as you know, that about the regulations, the conduct expected of an officer, and it's you know all the sorts of things we would expect of a police officer would be bound by it. Don't do anything to bring into disrepute, reflects its credit upon the individual, member of the police department. No misdeeds, malfeasance. The arbitrator didn't analyze the contract and say I believe that the board didn't have just cause in the context of the contract to do what it did to discharge the employer. Isn't that what the Court of Appeals is saying, is that the arbitrator just simply supplanted the board's decision with his own view of what should occur without analyzing the rationale of the board looking at the essence of the contract?
I believe if you read that, pages 5, 6, 7, 8, that you were reading a great deal more into that decision than what the court did, because there is nothing that I read in that court's decision which specifically analyzes the arbitrator's ruling in the context of the union 61. They got the test and told, without any reference to the arbitrator's opinion, that the arbitrator has committed this act of manifest disregard, which in our view ignores the fact that the arbitrator throughout the arbitration was discussing the question of whether the employer had just cause to administer the level of discipline. And as you remember, that's what we had in the grievance, that this, the level of discipline is unreasonable for this fact. That's exactly what the arbitrator was doing. He was analyzing the case to determine whether a just cause standard for the employer.
But I guess it seems to me that if the board, if the arbitrator has before him or her an issue of whether the board, in the context of the agreement, essence of the agreement, where the board has sort of missed the point, has doesn't have just cause to do what it did, in the context of what is required of the police officer, that is to do these things, to be honest and all and so forth, obey the laws and all that, and the arbitrator decides that the board missed it, I would agree with you, but the problem is the arbitrator never even commented on that. The arbitrator just said, well, he's contrite, and he's found God, and so the board didn't have just cause. There's a disconnect there for me, I guess, and that's what I'm looking to see whether you can connect it for me.
With all due respect, Chief Justice Meyer, the arbitrator, I believe, because I read the decision, spent a considerable amount of time analyzing, in fact, quoted the transcript provided by the inspector. The decision-making process that the employer went to come to its conclusion, that very issue that you have addressed to me is covered by the arbitration decision. The arbitrator specifically addressed what did the employer do to come to its conclusion and found the employer's reasoning and procedure performing.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Mr. Hollingsworth.
Good morning, Your Honors. This case this morning presents this court with an opportunity to reaffirm the state of the law in Ohio as it relates to arbitrations and their advocacy in this state. This case does not present a situation where the Court of Appeals, substituted its decision in favor of the arbitrator. That is not the case here. This case involves an employee who admitted to having engaged in on-duty misconduct which resulted in his termination. The Court of Appeals, in determining that the arbitrator exceeded his authority in this particular case, could well have indicated that they were going to reverse the decision and enter a judgment in favor of the employee. It did. The Court of Appeals decided that this matter should be returned to the parties for arbitration by an arbitrator who would, in fact, interpret and apply the parties' agreement, which is what should happen.
Is there a document, which I don't see in any of the attachments, and it's no doubt in the record, but is there a document that sets forth the scope of the arbitrator's, the request for arbitration?
And there is a grievance form which was filled out by Mr. McCoy, which indicated that he was of the opinion that the employer had imposed excessive discipline and had engaged in progressive discipline. However, we believe the question of discipline subsequent with respect to this particular set of facts was one that was reserved solely to the employer in this case. In particular, the court has, as part of this record, the collective bargaining agreement. At Article 4, Section 1, it states the management's rights clause, and in particular that says, except were specifically and expressly provided for the contrary in this agreement, certain documents were incorporated into this agreement. That was the personnel manual and the Miami Township Department's standard operating procedures. With respect to those standard operating procedures, it indicates that the Board of Trustees is the body that would impose any discipline, which would include suspending, demoting, or dismissing the facts as presented to this board were, as has been admitted by the FOA, were undisputed. This officer committed a grievous act of misconduct on the job, admitted his misconduct to the board, and as a result of that, was terminated. With respect to the collective bargaining agreement, which is the basis upon which the arbitrator would have any authority here, that agreement indicates that except as specifically modified by this agreement, any supplementary agreement that may be after be made, all the rights, powers, and authority the employer had prior to signing of this agreement are retained by the employer and remain exclusively and without limitation within the rights of management. Management reserved unto itself with respect to this particular clause the right to impose discipline on an employee who commits a workable infraction.
Is there no limitation or no, does the agreement provide for the employee to have, to grieve the level of discipline?
No, it does not, because this particular provision clearly reserves unto the employer the right to determine the scope of the
scope.
What the employee can grieve is the question of whether or not there is just cause for discipline. And that is the issue that was presented to the arbitrator below, whether or not there was just cause. But the problem we have had in this case ever since it got into the court system is the inconsistency in the arbitrator's decision. The FOP has argued below that the arbitrator did not find that there was just cause in this. But clearly there must have been, if not expressly and implicit determination, that there was just cause for discipline because the arbitrator found that a 30-day suspension was warranted. So we've got an inconsistent position on the part of the FOP, which we can't seem to square with the facts in this case.
So I'm trying to understand your position about the general contract. This police officer had been late to work a couple of times, and the township trustees, the appointing authority, fired him for that. Was that not something that he needed to go to arbitration?
The question of whether or not there was just cause for the disciplinary action, he could certainly agree. The question of the scope of the discipline, he could not agree.
So I guess I'm having a tough time understanding this. Just scope, that's the question of the distinction here. What is it that the arbitrator decides then?
Whether or not there was just cause for the disciplinary.
Doesn't just cause sort of imply that the arbitrator is deciding whether this discipline is too light or too severe?
No, it doesn't, because what controls the arbitrator's authority are the terms of the collective bargaining agreement.
And so the only thing we can arbitrate is whether or not there is any cause for discipline. Isn't that what you're saying?
Correct. And the employer in this
case. It's not just cause. As long as there's any cause to discipline, then the township trustees can do whatever they wish.
The contract for the suit, just like it said that the employee can bring to question whether or not it was just cause for disciplinary action. It does not indicate that the employee can read the scope of the discipline taken by the employee.
Except, Mr. Hollingsworth, what do you say, what's the meaning then of Section 3A of Article 6, which says right after discipline, A says, discipline shall take into account the nature of the violation, the employee's record of discipline, and the employee's record of performance and conduct. Would the arbitrator be within the scope of his assignment to, you know, under use A as part of the collective bargaining agreement to look at this?
He may well be, but the issue here is whether or not the employer has looked unto himself the sole right to impose discipline, retaining that discretion. And the answer is clear under the management rights clause with the incorporation of the personnel management and the standard operating procedures that the employer reserved unto itself the right to impose discipline if it would be appropriate for the circumstances. This is the Article 87, Section 3, I believe, is the one we're referring to.
Yes,
3A. Which talks about taking into account the employee's, the negative violation of the employee's record and the employee's regular performance and conduct. That was presented to this arbitrator. It was a part of the pre-disciplinary investigation that took place prior to Officer McCoy being presented with this issue before the board.
Are you saying that the employer's right that you read to us can't be appealed then?
I'm saying that the question of the employer's scope of discipline is not a subject of arbitration.
So, is not a scope of arbitration?
No. The question of the scope of discipline is not the question of whether or not it was just cause for discipline. The employee can appeal that it can bring that issue. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, counsel, I'm having difficulty with this concept. It seems to me the argument that you advance leaves the purpose of the arbitration division. Any employee who doesn't from time to time give just cause for discipline, and under your definition, it seems to be any cause. And I understand where you're going. Once there's any cause, then there is unlimited scope to the discipline part of the employee.
I think you missed. Employer is limited by the terms of the collective bargaining agreement to determine to take a disciplinary action when there is a determination of just cause. And just cause is the agreeable item. And this is where
the justness of the cause. The justness of the cause, such as you know, the employer thinks someone stole money and they didn't. So it wouldn't be just cause. One could determine that but you say that's all, not what should be the punishment for the tardiness.
I'm indicating that
he really was tardy, that's the justness.
Correct.
And this and the firing, therefore, is not grievable.
Correct. Not the subject. And then this issue the court has addressed in Ohio office. The court has clearly indicated with the contract clearly states that the employer takes away from the arbitrator certain duties and responsibilities. That arbitrator cannot invade that. This contract takes away from the arbitrator the ability to review the scope of the discipline imposed. It does not take from him the ability to review the question of whether there's just cause.
You don't have any quarrel, though, with RC 271110 applying in this case. The limit to the circumstances before in vacating arbitrator's award.
Absolutely not, because in this case, by not following the terms of the collective bargaining agreement, the arbitrator exceeded his authority, and on that basis, this decision was subject to being vacated by the court.
Let me see if I understand your position. I think it is that if the arbitrator finds that there was just cause, which is a very subjective, obviously, test, for the board to discharge Officer McCoy for stealing twice, making $100 on two different occasions, that if that in the arbitrator's mind seems to be just cause for the discharge, for the sanctioned discharge here, that that's the only determination the arbitrator makes. If he decides it was just cause, that stealing twice from persons and the police officer was just cause discharge, that's the end of it. It'd also be the end of it if the arbitrator decides that that's not just cause.
Correct.
The arbitrator stops there and says no just cause, no sanction.
If there's no just cause, then the employer can't go to business.
So it's his assignment, according to your view of the contract, is just cause for discipline.
Correct.
As opposed to the analysis of just cause for firing, just
Correct.
Cause for suspension, just docking pay, any other kind of thing. That, in other words, just cause doesn't go beyond for discipline.
Correct.
But that's tough. That's a real tough thing to swallow in light of 3A, isn't it? 7-3A? That seems to give employees some basis for arguing the scope of the discipline, doesn't it? When we put it right in the agreement, we say discipline must, you know, fit within these bounds.
No, the question presented is the scope of the authority of the arbitrator, and it says the arbitrator's duties and responsibilities are bound by the terms of the agreement. The agreement here doesn't say that the arbitrator has to decide the question of whether or not this employee was a good employee, whether or not the particular violation was heinous or maybe de minimis, whether or not his conduct...
Well, it doesn't say anything about what the arbitrator should do. He's just given the contract, isn't he, to construe?
Correct. And the question presented by the grievance was whether or not it was just cause. It was clearly stated in the FOP, the post-hearing of the arbitrator.
So speaking to that, what you argue support for this comes from the fact that he recommended some discipline. So if he felt there was no just cause, his fine would be reinstated with full pay, no discipline at all.
If he had found no just cause, then you never get to the question of scope of discipline. But having found just cause, even though there is considerable disagreement about what he wrote,
I must tell you, I'm really struggling. It seems to me what we have is an arbitrator's award that's tough for any of us to swallow. But to get around that, you're asking us to really handcuff what would seem to me ordinary to be a routine procedure of what an arbitrator does and decide it's a little too little, too much.
I know it's the red light come on, but if you allow me to respond to that. I'm not asking you to do anything other than what the court has done historically, and that is to make sure that arbitrations mean what they are intended to do, and as a result, it's usually not bringing it before the court. But the scope of the arbitrator's authority is bound by the terms of the agreement the parties entered into. This arbitrator's authority was bound by this agreement. We have to make sure that the arbitrators who hear these alternative disputes will resolve them in accordance with the terms of the agreement that are put before. That controls the scope of the authority here. And that's why we say it's just a matter of
Thank you, Mr. Hollinger. Mr. Cox, you've saved about 2.5 minutes of your time.
The arbitrator's
that this was so, but it is really not so, that your report was an error. He gives the township reasons for why he is objecting to that interpretation they would like him to follow. I also find, as another observation, interesting that nowhere in this argument, except for the generalization that the Court of Appeals is right, is there any analysis of the Court of Appeals decision. We are here because the Court of Appeals decided to vacate this award. They appear, I think, on page 78 of their opinion, to rely on the Merrill Lynch case, the case in which the Federal Circuit Court upheld the parent. And they also were relying on a case where the Circuit Court decided a question to manifest that it was manifest disregard for the law, not manifest disregard for the parent. I don't think the Court of Appeals decision is supportive on its face. When you look at it, it doesn't hold water. It does not make sense in terms of the arguments that the appellee has made or in terms of the desired result of the Court of Appeals is trying to.
Do you, Mr. Cox, do you agree that the arbitrator seemed to have required the board to have had some corroboration of the admission by Mr. McCoy that he stole money twice? That seemed to me that the arbitrator seemed to be saying nobody corroborated his admission, and that's a defect. Did you read it that way?
Justice Moyer, I think that there's several reasons why he is rejecting the township's reasoning in this matter. And he found that one of the deficiencies that he felt that to sustain the road that they had taken in this case, there should have been more. I would agree with you in part that there is, at least on that one issue, it's not the only issue. He does several things, but on that issue, yes, he does make an analysis, and he finds that he believes that would be a deficiency in terms of how he is analyzing the case in court.
I guess it's just a favor to say we're all kind of struggling with the arbitrator's award, and maybe we're trying a way to get around it. But that seems to me to be just an incredible statement by an arbitrator, where there's nothing to suggest that the officer, I don't think, said the officer's under any duress, that his admission to stealing the money was not accurate or honest. Honest admission of stealing. Why the arbitrator would say it's deficient because no one corroborated that. Why would that be? Why would the arbitrator require that?
Chief Justice Moyer, as I said, it's one of a number of points he makes. And what he is doing what the party's asking him to analyze this question as the grievance of the grievance. Is this an unreasonable discipline for a legal passage charge? As part of it, that part is announced as a small part. His analysis of why he believed it was not reasonable. The discipline was not reasonable for the passage charge.
And that was his charge by the parties.
Yes.
His charge by the parties was to determine whether or not the punishment given was commensurate with the act.
Yes.
Thank you, Chuck. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.